Hey, everybody. My exclusive remarks at Turning Point USA's Young Women's Leadership Summit. We had a great time at YWLS. We're going to have a better time at tpusa.com/SAS. So make sure you check it out. That's tpusa.com/SAS. The Student Action Summit is going to be amazing. So check it out, tpusa.com/SAS. We have Trump. We have DeSantis. We have Gutfeld. We have Waters. We have the biggest names in the whole movement. tpusa.com/SAS. tpusa.com/SAS. No advertisers in this episode. Thank you for those of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. If you've never visited Turning Point USA's website, I encourage you to do it. tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com.
Okay, let's get to some questions.
Hi, I'm Liberty. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I was wondering, how do you stay, like, motivated, like, getting into politics and all that stuff? How do you keep yourself motivated to learn more and keep researching?
It's a great question. Your name is literally Liberty. That's awesome. That's amazing. So Turning Point USA celebrates 10 years tomorrow. It's amazing. And our 10-year anniversary. Look, you have to have drive. And you have to be somebody that wants it really bad. And I think a lot of you do. But it's not for everybody. If you get involved in politics, you have to be willing to lose all your friends. You have to be willing to be bullied, harassed, called awful names, probably publicly doxxed, and be unfairly attacked for a long period of time. However, the good part about getting involved in this fight is that it's totally worth it, is that you're actually doing something meaningful, not just rearranging numbers at some accounting firm, that you're actually defending the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world. And so the best way to, let's say, continue the drive is to be able to answer the why. And if you can't answer the why, then you shouldn't get involved in this. And the why is the most important question, which is, I want my kids to live in a free country. And when you look at things intergenerationally, all of a sudden you stop being the most important person in the world, and you start fighting for future generations that they might also enjoy this nation. And so, look, you have to know why you're getting involved in it. And you brought up a good point, which is, you know, one of the things I want to encourage everybody in this room to do is take learning very seriously. You know, for about an hour to an hour and a half every single day, I turn my phone on airplane mode and I'm listening to a book, reading a book, listening to something, you know, taking a Hillsdale online course, by the way, which all of you could do, charlieforhillsdale.com. All their online courses are amazing. And we partner with Hillsdale College. I've taken 15 of them. There's 30 of them. And they're tough. I mean, it's work, but it's fulfilling. You'll learn everything about from economics to the Constitution, to the Declaration, to American history. But that's the kind of drive that I think will make you be a differentiating factor. And I'll just say this, that drive is diminishing generation after generation. Generation Z is not as driven even as some people in millennials. And what do I mean by that? It's just being willing to show up early and stay late and not act as if there's anything special because you worked extra hours. So that's the great differentiator, but you got to be able to answer the why. Great question. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Amy Hardy, and I'm a mom with my daughter. My question is about college. So my husband and I differ on this. I feel like she needs to go. She is in school. She was at Point Loma University. That lasted one semester and a big chunk of change. Pulled her out because they were not doing Turning Point USA, would not honor the chapter. So the struggle now is she pulled back. She's at the community college for a short time until she can transfer in. The problem is how do we take a stand for not vaccinated? I don't want to be. I'm not taking the jab. I don't want my kids to take the jab. But I do. My husband says, screw it. We're done with school. She doesn't need school. She's a go-getter. She can do it all day long on her own. I'm kind of like, she needs an education. But there's a struggle here because young people can't go to school if they give in to the jab or the boosters or right. all of that. So what are we doing as parents to
Great question.
Support this?
Can I ask you a question? So why do you think she needs to go to college?
Well, she probably... Okay, let me just say this. My husband went to college for 3 days. And when he found out they didn't take roll, he's like, I'm out of here. He's a self-made millionaire. He's worked his ass off his whole life. Zoe has the exact same. She's just like that, so I get it. I guess sometimes I just think, and I might get booed here, but I do think that women are overlooked because we don't have enough credentials. We haven't gotten up to this area in the workforce, so we are overlooked. So my thing to her is like, girl, get out there and get as many things as you can under your belt and with you as a tool and a strategy so that you can go out. And
that's actually that's the best answer I've ever
thing.
That's the best answer. I totally disagree, but that's actually the best answer I've ever heard. I want to not because your intent is right, which is that it's a tough world and I want my child to be able to at least have the credentials,
yeah.
right? And you answered it correctly, which is you didn't say that college was going to make her smarter or wiser. It was just going to be like, you know, we need the boxes checked. So look, I never tell people what to do in their own personal decisions because there's multiple millions of factors, micro decisions that I'm not able to kind of see into. But I'll just kind of give you some kind of general wisdom, which is outside of a couple colleges in America, I think college is a colossal waste of time. I really do. And so... Now let me clarify. If you want to be an engineer, a lawyer or a doctor, then I think there's a path for that. But a vast majority of people that go to college go to study the humanities or they go for a communications degree and all that. I'm not trying to insult you if you're studying those things, by the way, okay? You were just told to go get a piece of paper and borrow a bunch of money you don't have to study things that don't matter to find jobs that don't exist, right? And that cycle continues. And so college has this impression by upper middle class society as kind of being this rite of passage and they're going to find themselves. And that can happen with some people for sure. I think some people definitely grow in college. I will say that young women generally get a lot more out of college than young men. I think, and that's just a general rule. So your gut instinct in that way isn't totally wrong. But she's at the Young Women's Leadership Summit here, so she's probably exempt from this. However, parents need to hear this. When you send your child to college, you're going to play Russian roulette with their values. And I hear this every single day from parents. Again, we have over 100,000 donors at Turning Point USA, and we get thousands of letters every single month. Charlie, I sent my kid to this college, and our relationship has never been the same. They no longer have faith. They hate the country, and I don't know what happened to them. And I paid for it. And so that, I know that's probably not a fear for you, but... The question is, what do you think you're going to get out of it, right? If you admit it's just kind of a credential and I need to get that piece of paper, then that's the proper way to go into it, right? With kind of, and know that they're going to try to indoctrinate you at every corner. But let me also say this, though. You say your daughter's a go-getter and has drive. College has a tendency and has a track record of destroying that. It has a tendency to actually make you think less of your entrepreneurial instincts. Has a tendency to make you just think, go get a corporate job, and because now you got to pay off your student loan debt. We need more entrepreneurs in our country. We need more people to take risks. And I always laugh when people say, and I mean no offense by this, so please, people say, I'm studying entrepreneurship. Like, you don't study entrepreneurship. You do entrepreneurship, okay? You go take the risk, you get in the marketplace. And so, look, everybody's different. For me, college wasn't the right choice. I took a gap year. It's been a gap decade now. And I understand that upper middle class society, what I just talked about, is kind of a thought crime, right? But I'll say one last thing to parents, and I'll leave it at this, right? Which is it about your child's future, or is it about your fear that you might have to turn to your neighbors or your relatives and say, Johnny isn't going to college? That's tough. Because deep down, parents talk a good game. They're like, yeah, you know, we need more welders. We need more electricians. We need more HVAC. We need more. And everyone agrees, right? But my kid's not going to work construction. My kid's going to be in an air-conditioned office with a degree looking at a screen all day long. So it's something to think about, because a vast majority of young people, especially young men, when asked the question, they believe they're getting nothing out of their college degree, it's a waste of time, and that they can't wait to get out of it. It's a really expensive track and trajectory that we're on. By the way, the national graduation rate is 59%. How many of you know someone that dropped out of college? Raise your hand. Every hand goes up. If you had a 41% chance of getting food poisoning from a restaurant, they'd be closed down and they'd all be indicted for mass poisoning. And yet, 41% of kids that go to college drop out. Maybe we have too many kids going in the first place. Thank you for your question.
Hi, Charlie. My name's Ivana, and my question is, you have often talked about monopolies are bad.
Yes.
But if you took all government involvement out of monopolies, such as tax corruption or laws supporting big tech, would monopolies still be bad? And if so, explain in detail why.
That's a great question. It's a very thoughtful question. So let's talk first, why are monopolies bad? So one of the principles of the Constitution that we love is this idea of separation of powers. And so we believe that not one person, one organization, should be able to have unchecked power over another, which is where we get the principle of checks and balances. And so, and its intent, the United States Constitution was written to say that absolute power corrupts absolutely, as Sir Lord Acton would say. So therefore, we believe that there should always be checks on that kind of a power, right? So then you bring it to kind of what you're talking about as private company monopolies, which is, what is the check and balance on a private company? Well, that's competition and market forces, usually. And so what's happened, though, and this is something where a lot of conservatives, in my personal opinion, we need to kind of think a little bit more openly about things, is what happens when Google becomes stronger than your government? What happens when Google becomes its own monopoly? Because we should have the premise, right, of separation of powers and checks and balances. So how do we check Google? Well, we start a competitor, is what we're always told, right? Like Parler, and then they eliminate Parler in one night when Amazon, Google, and Apple decided it should no longer exist. Now, your question was very specific, which is, if we got rid of the cronyism and the tax loopholes and all of this, would monopolies still exist? We don't know. That's I think, a nice thought exercise for a college economics course, but it's not rooted in anything that we're even close to grasping in reality right now. So we could guess, we could say maybe, we could say it might, but here's what I do know right now, is that we as conservatives must be honest that our liberty granted by God is under attack by both the government and private companies, both. And that's something that we have to wrestle with, right? Because, and I'll let you have a follow-up in a second, which is, we as conservatives always believe that the market will then have a check on these private companies. But what happens when those private companies start to work in collusion with one another, right? When Google starts to look out for Apple's best interests, that look out for Facebook's best interests, against your best interest, to silence our voice and then get our kids addicted to screens at age of 7, where they do nothing but stare at Instagram and TikTok feeds all day long, and we're told that somehow this is a better thing. That's the question that conservatives need to answer. So my general argument for this is, I want to try to make market forces to solve problems that government created. But when it comes to the Silicon Valley companies in particular, and you do not have a check on power, I believe that's a moral question. Quick follow-up. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's also like, people, you talk about this, and I don't want to say like I'm for monopolies. I'm not. But at the same time, with capitalism, like, how far should we be regulating that? Because I'm in my head, I'm thinking, well, no, we shouldn't be regulating the market. The government shouldn't be involved.
Yeah.
But then we have these big monopolies. I mean, there's not a really clear line, and you might not have an answer, but I guess that's where I've been thinking
a lot. Yeah, that's a great question. So where do you draw the line? There's a great word that comes from a Greek word, which means basically common sense, called prudence. right? So I think we can all agree that if you have 150 million active users in America, you probably should be treated a little bit differently than the local bakery or the local coffee shop, right? I mean, that's just prudence, right? You look at that, you're like, okay, wait a second. I understand market principles, but when all of a sudden the business model of Instagram is to try to hire a bunch of neuroscientists to get 8-year-olds addicted to staring at screens all day long, I'm not going to all of a sudden be like, well, that's the market. I'm like, actually, no, that's no different than pushing opioids on kids in a like a lesser extent. And so that's where we have to kind of, we have to balance the beauty of the market and the ability to improve people's lives with also the human cost. So what the best word is prudence. How do you come across a prudent decision? Dialogue, discussion, and also understanding what the end goal is. The end goal is not profit for profit's sake. This is where libertarians disagree with me. The end goal is human flourishing and the pursuit of virtue and people to live happy and faith-filled lives. That's the end goal. And so as markets allow us to achieve that goal, I'm all for it. When all of a sudden these massive companies start to act, I think, in ways that are a little more, let's say, reckless, then we have to start to consider other options. Wonderful question. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hi, my name is Halia. I was fortunate enough to be a homeschool student all the way through high school. So I just graduated high school, and I'll be going off to college this fall to study nursing. And I was just wondering, so for students that haven't exactly faced adversity before, what advice would you give for if I want to be part of like a Students for Life club or like a Turning Point USA chapter? What advice would you give for students that haven't handled that before?
It's a great question. So I think too highly of all of you to lie to you. Your life is going to be temporarily miserable. It will. Every high school friend you thought that was close to you, not every, but most, will start sending you nasty messages. How many of you experience this as soon as you come out as a conservative? Yeah, of course. And so you just got to be ready for them. And you got to make that decision, right? I'm not going to give any kind of false impressions or kind of... But here's the cool thing, is that in life, you want to be the person that grows tougher as the circumstances grow more difficult, not that you run away from tough situations. So the cool thing is God made us as human beings, as creatures that adapt, and we adapt really well. You're going to get stronger through that. And it'll be tough, and you'll be texting your friends that don't want to talk to you anymore, like, why are you doing this? And I don't understand. And then you're going to make new friends. And then all of a sudden, trial and tribulation isn't going to really faze you. Because guess what? That's not going to be the last kind of chapter of adversity you're going to face as a human being. And this is one of the things, this is why the left is so fragile, this is why we are going to beat the left, is because they run away from these sort of difficulties. They're like, you're making me unsafe, like life is actually unsafe. Like, get tougher and stop trying to make the world adjust to your sort of mental paranoia. Like, the world is full of risks. Driving here is a risk. Living is a risk. You cannot be happy if you are afraid of risk all the time. It's this mass neurosis that has kind of just spread across our land. So lean in if that's what you want for your life, but be ready that you might lose job opportunities, internships, people will look at you differently. They're going to try to tar and feather you. You're going to have people try to say that, oh yeah, you're making a mistake. You can look around and know that you're not alone, but you're going to be tougher because of it. And here's the other good news. You have a big organization like Turning Point USA that has your back, that's going to make it easy for you to do that. Okay? God bless you.
Hi, my name's Maddie, and I'm from Arkansas, and I'm just wondering what your advice is to women in their mid-20s to early 30s who have desired to get married and have children early on, but they're having a hard time meeting a man to settle down with who will be a leader and initiator of the relationship.
Great question. Okay. So the best place to meet a man is, this is the equation, okay? So go find a Bible-believing church. This is how you do it, okay? Get to know the pastor's wife and tell her that you want to find a husband, and it will happen. I'm not kidding. I'm telling you, pastors' wives are always setting people. They know the whole roster of men. They're always looking. It's a gifting. I'm telling you. Pastors' wives, they just get it. I've seen more marriages happen there. But it's more than just kind of looking at the church as a dating tool, which is helpful, obviously. But get involved in the church, right? Is volunteer. Get involved in Bible ministries or small group ministries, as I mean. That's a great place because at least there's some form of shared values. And then this is the other thing, which is tell people you're actively looking for somebody. I know this, and don't be desperate. But be like, look, I've kind of been striking out the last couple years. You know, if you know anyone, that'd be great. And then be open-minded and willing for what God might have in store for you. But it's not going to happen just by kind of sitting at home and be like, he's going to crash through the window at any moment.
Okay.
Maybe, probably not, right? And so you got to put yourself in kind of those environments where that is going to be fostered and that is going to happen. And be active, right? Make yourself presentable and present yourself to the world in a way where at any moment you could meet your future partner, right? And so then I'll kind of go back to the other advice I gave earlier, which is hold yourself to a high standard. Here's the thing, is that in a world where men unfortunately are oversaturated to be able to get whatever they want, whenever they want it, have the self-discipline to all of a sudden be like, well, if you want me, then you're going to have to get your act together. Because you think about it, it's the opposite, right? It's something that some women struggle with, which is like, hey, if I'm going to get in a relationship with you and I'm going to partner with you, you know, we're going to have some very clear guidelines and rules, such as some women make the decision that I'm saving myself for marriage. And I think that's awesome, by the way. I think it's honorable. I think it's phenomenal. And so that could be difficult for some people. But I think the church is the best place, and pastors' wives. I'm telling you, it's the secret. God bless you. Thank you.
My name's Catherine. I'm from Minnesota. I go to a small Christian school. And so I was wondering, what would your advice be? Because a lot of my friends share Christian values, biblical values for things like abortion, but they're not really interested or as passionate maybe as I am because they don't want to get into the divisiveness of it. Kind of coming from the idea that Jesus is first, which I can't disagree with because that is for my life, but how can I also encourage them that this is how we can fight for spreading the truth of the gospel as well?
It's a phenomenal question. So we have TPUSA Faith that we launched last year to help answer this question, all right? So let me kind of just add some context to this. We have people of all different faiths and backgrounds here and people of no faith, and you're all welcome here at Turning Point USA. We're all in the fight for liberty. I'm very open about my faith. It's the most important thing in my life. I gave my life to Christ in fifth grade, and it's the greatest thing a human being can do. So that's the most important thing, number one. So my life's work is involved in the second most important thing, which is to make sure you could do the first thing. To make sure you could have church, to make sure that you can have religious conscience, to make sure you can live in a free society where you're able to worship your Creator and be able to spread the gospel. And so this is the tension point, which is some Christians will say that nowhere in the Bible are there examples of people trying to influence government or trying to influence secular government for God's purpose. Well, they're going to have to explain Esther, Mordecai, Nehemiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, and Joseph, but that's a separate issue. Because all throughout the scriptures, there are heroes that we elevate of God's chosen people trying to influence secular government. And then also I would encourage you to kind of present to them Jeremiah 29:7. People talk a lot about Jeremiah 29:11, but Jeremiah 29:7 is a verse where it says, demand the welfare for the nation that you are in, because your welfare is tied to your nation's welfare. That's the Lord speaking. And that is God saying that you should care about your country, that you should care about your nation. So the question then is, well, how should I care about it as a Christian? Because it just seems so unclear. Well, I think there's three easy issues that Christians can all agree on. The church is essential and it should never be shut down or locked down again by any government or bureaucrat. Number two, life begins at conception and every single life is worthy of protection. And number three, God created man and God created woman and we're not overthinking it. It's that simple, right? So hopefully they'll be able to agree on part of it. But you mentioned an interesting thing, which is they do not want to engage in the divisiveness. Well, they should read parts of Luke where Jesus said, I did not come to unite, but I came to divide. And I'm going to turn father against son, and I'm going to turn brother against brother. Look, here's the harsh part of the gospel that people don't always want to talk about. And that's right, I said harsh, which is that if you believe in the gospel, you also believe in damnation. And you believe in truth. We want the truth for all people. But if somehow there's been this kind of whitewashing of somehow I can't say anything that's going to offend anybody, well, you know, if you kind of dive deeper into like, hey, if you don't accept your life as Christ, it's not going to work out very well for you in eternity. What we really have to challenge your friends with, which is, how exactly is the gospel not divisive? It's so clear. It says, whether it be the treatment of children or not accepting Jesus as the Lord and Savior, it's, for God so loved the world, for he sent his one and only begotten Son, for whoever does not believe in him shall not perish. That's pretty harsh. Perishing in the verse that many of us identify as the most hopeful verse in the Bible. But the final thing I'll say is this, is God's heart for his children, both in an earthly way and an eternal way, is for us to live in liberty and not to live under tyranny. It is a story of Exodus. It's the story of Jesus. The truth will set us free. And I believe it's also our mission here, part of our mission, to make sure that we do not live under dictatorship, authoritarianism, or centralized control. God wants us to live free. Thank you. Okay, we'll do two more.
Hi, my name is Cecily. I'm from Katy, Texas. And I want to say, God bless America, and let's make America great again. And thank you for being here.
Awesome. Thank you. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay, all right. All right, we'll take two more. If someone wants to get in line really quick, we'll... Okay, there you go. That's it. The taker has come. Okay.
Hi, I'm Elise. I'm from San Antonio, Texas. I am also a lifelong homeschooler. And I was wondering, what advice would you give to someone who is still figuring out what they would like to do career-wise, and I mean like a business, who has so many passions and interests? Would you like recommend a micro approach where you choose something that you know makes money and you have time to pursue interests, or start a business that has something to do with your passion and monetize that somehow?
I might give you a piece of advice you haven't heard. What's your skill? What are you good at?
I'm journalism, writing, photography, music, kind of that.
Which of your skills do you also have a passion for?
All of them.
Okay, good. So my passion is not directly correlated with my skill. If it was up to me, I would just do college football all day long, nonstop, and that's it. Not exactly my skill, okay? I mean, I know enough to be dangerous about it. But I found something I was good at, communication, speaking, and also something I had a passion for. So the intersection of your passion and skill is going to be your purpose. And that's something where, because sometimes you have to realize your passion is not something you're very good at. People say, follow your passion. Terrible advice. Awful advice. Follow your passion that you actually are above average at as well, right? That's the advice I would give to you. So this is why I'm not a fan of college, is because when you're 18, 19, and 20, that's when you should be going to ask people that are good at what they're doing and figuring out if it's actually something you're passionate about. Because you might think you're passionate about it because you took a journalism 101 course, and you're like, man, this is terrible. Good. If you find out what you don't want to do when you're 18, you've saved all that time of not going and borrowing money and taking all those classes. Finding out what you don't want to do is really, really powerful and great. So, and I'll just reinforce that. If you do not know what you want to do with your life, find something you're good at and something that you're passionate about, and then find somebody who's already established in that career, and go look at them in the eyes and say, can I work for you for free? I will clean the floors. I will bring you coffee. And guess what? They will be so blown away because of the lack of hunger and drive in the world. They'll be like, yeah, sure. And guess what? After 6 months, if you really apply yourself and you show up early, you will be further ahead in that particular company 99% of the time than the kids that just graduated from UT and Texas Tech. 99% of the time. Because here's what's going to happen. Month 4, month 5, month 6, someone's going to not show up to work. And an opening will happen. They'll be like, hey, you've been doing a good job. Can you fill in for a second? And that will be your time to then all of a sudden step up. And they're like, all right, I could just hire you. And now, this is a step, right? That's a leap of faith. Because, as we talked about, right, some parents say, got to have the piece of paper to do that. I'm an employer, right? We employ 400-plus people at Turning Point USA. Piece of paper means nothing to me. I care about your character, your drive, and your integrity. And I think that's what employers are going to be looking more and more for. Thank you.
All right, last question.
Hi, I'm Reagan. I'm from Colorado Springs. And I was just wondering, as like a young adult, a teenager, how do I assert myself into the political world and kind of like get into it more, I guess, and become a character in it?
So start a Turning Point USA chapter, number one. Number two, go to the beautiful church in Colorado Springs. They do an amazing job. Is it Fervent or Brave? Fervent Church. They're in Colorado Springs. They'd love to talk to you in the back of the room. They're an amazing church. Spoke there. We had a packed event. But here's the thing. Look, and it's kind of a recurring theme that I'm going to kind of put forward. At Turning Point USA, there's a multitude of opportunities to get engaged, get involved, start a chapter, you become a leader, all these amazing things. but also just speaking out and learning how to articulate your beliefs at a younger age is really important. Like the lunch table conversations or the conversations with your friends, because you're going to hear arguments that you might not have heard. Here's the cool thing, though. At Turning Point USA and our library of podcasts and videos, there is not an argument from the left that we have not heard that we can't help you with. And as you kind of grow and you're like, wow, that's an interesting argument. I want to be a, you will grow stronger. You'll grow wiser. And guess what? The other side, as time moves on, they don't have those kind, they do not sharpen their arguments as they get older. They just repeat the pablum over and over again, where so many of you, like, as you start to dive deep, you're like, oh yeah, I know how to respond to that, or I know how to respond to this. And you become a better activist and a better communicator. But the younger you get involved, in my personal opinion, the better. And it's a leap of faith, but there's a great community that would love to support you in Colorado Springs. And you start that Turning Point chapter, it'll change your life. So, I'm sorry, thank you. We're good, thank you. All right, close this, and then we have a very special speaker coming up. So, we'll close out the conference in a minute. Just a reminder, SAS, Student Action Summit, okay? I'll make sure you guys register for that. It's going to be incredible. Ron DeSantis, President Trump, so many other people. And I just want to thank all of you the last couple days that have gone outside your comfort zone to say hello to people and introduce yourself to people that did not come here, came here and didn't know anybody. So thank you for doing that. It's amazing the amount of testimonials that are just pouring in. It's just awesome. And if you, and once this general session is over, please make sure you support our sponsors one last time. Go by the Turning Point Action booth and the Turning Point USA chapter high school and get involved booth. And I'm the only thing standing in the way of, I think, one of your most favorite speakers here. So we'll allow that to happen, and I'll be back in a little bit. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.